C1T. Number 4A.
We come now to the second subject, spirit, and that is on cassette 4. The main epitome that we have here is this, that teaching Christian Science demands strict adherence to what? Now we come to spirit, to the purity of spirit. And what does that involve? This involves the overcoming of evil and the practicing of good. We know that the synonymous term spirit is characterized by good, and therefore we have here the question of good and evil. Overcoming evil by what? Not by fighting evil, but by the true ethics, namely doing good. So we have the question of good and evil, not as a moral question, but as a spiritual proposition, and to work it out also on a spiritual basis. We have already seen that in the glossary, good is defined through the synonymous term spirit, and only that synonymous term, even defining good as omnipotence, omniscience, omnipresence, omniaction. Therefore, it gets a terrifically high definition, a definition as high as God itself. And so we can see that here the ethics that is touched upon is the ethics of scientific good. That question of good is a very interesting question, especially, for instance, if we consider how Mrs. Eddy introduces the whole question of good and evil through the chapters. You see, in the chapter on prayer, the first chapter, she only introduces really good and evil in the way that there is just one evil, therefore one good, without really saying what it is. Then in the chapter on Atonement and Eucharist, that good is another question that says, well, we should overcome good, evil with good. But it doesn't say anything about the nature of good. And then in the third chapter on marriage, she shows that good should have ascendancy over evil. So still a little bit the higher sense, but still not yet saying what is evil, what is good. Up to that point, you know, up to the page 71, Mrs. Eddy leaves it absolutely open what she understood, what she understands under the term good and evil. And it is only when she begins with the fourth chapter, Christian Science versus Spiritualism, that she begins to really give the scientific sense of good and evil. See, that chapter is at the point of the word as science, and so only when she comes to the point of science, she explains then what she understands under good and evil. It's there where for the first time she says, nothing is real and eternal, nothing is spirit, but God and his idea. So she gives first the absolute sense, what there is, only God and his idea, that is the only reality, that's the reality of spirit, and then continues and says, evil has no reality. For the very first time in those 70 pages, she tells the student that she considers evil as unreal. Up to that point, she leaves the reader uncertain what she considers evil to be. If it is something that is still a reality or not, She didn't explain that before. And so she says, evil is neither person, place, nor thing, but is simply a belief, an illusion of material sense. So here we get the very clear definition of evil as being not a reality, as having no reality, being just an illusion, being just a belief, and now that this evil is not humanly subjective, that it is does not belong to a person, does not belong to a place or thing. So brings it right back to its nothingness, to unreality, and making in this way good the only reality and the only factuality as being an idea of spirit. And what is spirit, she said? All is spirit, God and his ideas. So if we keep that in mind, what she has built up already through the first four chapters in the Word, through the Word as the Word, Word as Christ, Word as Christianity, Word as science. Now here, where we have science as the Word, naturally she can build on what she has been teaching before, and can build on the fact that really good is only divinely subjective. It's God. And that evil is nothing and therefore can be overcome. So here we take up that whole question which says now, did I read the whole epitome? I can't remember anymore, so I read it. Yes, I think we read it, yes. That this is here at the point where Christian Science demands strict adherence to the purity of spirit. Purity also always means here spiritual purity, not moral purity, spiritual purity, showing that spirit is the only. That's the purity in science. It's the only. And therefore, that this involves the overcoming of evil and the practicing of good. So we can ask ourselves now, what does it mean, practicing the good? This is a general statement, and sometimes it's quite enough to remind ourselves of that. But the student would always say, well, you give a statement, but what does it mean? And that's a healthy question, because he asked that this statement should be elucidated through the seven synonymous terms. And that's what we should do always in practice and in daily life, that we are not just satisfied with a true statement, just a nice, true, absolute statement, which is true, but that we should say, now, what does it mean if we want to consider it in as a perfect concept and not just as a statement? And in order to get the perfect concept, we have to look at it from all the seven different standpoints. So, as a subtone of mind, Mrs. Eddy will present here that what is demanded from the point of view of mind is exposing and denouncing evil without believing in the reality of evil. So you have here spirit, namely the question of the reality of good, the unreality of evil. Mind says, don't believe that stuff. Mind is the counter fact of believing, of being ignorant about something, having a false notion about something, a false conception about something. So we have not to believe in it. Isn't it terrific that she would say such a thing, that she says, you encounter good and evil, and the very first thing you should do is not to believe it. Not to believe it. And the very first thing we usually do, that we believe it. So don't believe it. That would be science. All the rest is talking around on a human level, on the level of human conceptions, and it never really works. That's not teaching ourselves to be a Christian scientist. The marginal heading also points to this very fact. It reads, expose sin without believing in it. And so you can see that that tone of mind which counteracts the believing is here under consideration. How does she evolve that subject? She says, you see, error or evil, whatever you can call it, or sin, cannot be forever concealed by ignorance, nor by subtlety, nor by false charity. Evil will in time disclose and punish itself. We can't get around it, more or less, she says. We can't get around it. Why can't we get around it? Because she says that the recuperative action of the system, when mentally sustained by truth, goes on naturally. Says that it is always truth that is at work, that wants to destroy really that which is evil or erroneous. So therefore we can't get around it, therefore it's better to expose and denounce the claim of evil and disease. So it is here exposing and denouncing what? Not evil. The claim of evil. This is very important to see. If we would expose and denounce evil, we would be moralists. I would be falling right down on the level of the first and second degree, whereas the scientist does something else. He sees through the claim of evil and of sin. And then, and that's the most important part, realize no reality in them. Don't realize any reality in the claim. We have here a very nice exposition how Mrs. Eddy said that Christian Science was revealed to her as one intelligence analyzing, uncovering, and annihilating the claims of evil and the claims of error, which shows something very important, that many are willing to say, all right, let's analyze a situation, let's even uncover a situation, but unless we go and see its nothingness, we have made more of evil than less of evil. We have to go all along the way, to go all through those three stages. And until we have seen the nothingness of it, the unreality of the claim, we haven't really solved anything. Perhaps we have made things just worse. So this is the general method that she presents here, that how to tackle it, that we should not really believe in the claim of sin, nor in the reality of sin and evil and error and so on. And then see the analysis, the uncovering, but also the unreality of it. This is the general statement, and you will see in that whole tone that then she says, and there are two methods to take up according to the situation. If you have to deal with sin, then you have to deal in a different way than if you have to deal with disease. You know from the last chapter on Christian Science teaching very well that Mrs. Eddy always makes that difference, that you have to use two different methods for dealing with sin or with disease. That though behind both we can rely on one principle of healing, still there are two different methods how to deal with those two. And so she shows here how to deal with sin or with the sinner. And there, she says, look here, with a sinner, you just can't handle that with an absolute statement, with absolutism. She says, the sinner is not reformed merely by assuring him that he cannot be a sinner because there is no sin. Can you see the reasoning? We could fall into the trap of saying, all right, Christian Science teaches there is no sin because man is always justified before God, he's always the idea of God, he's always perfect idea of God, therefore there is no sin, therefore he cannot be a sinner, therefore we can say and assure him that he cannot be a sinner. He says, this you can't do. What should you do? You must, and now again she brings those three phases of detecting, removing, and point out the illusion and see the unreality of it. He says, as analysis, she says, you must detect the claim of sin, the claim of sin. Then the uncovering, remove the mask and point out the illusion. That's the uncovering. Thus get the victory over sin and so prove its unreality. That's the annihilation. So that's the way how to deal with that category of error which we call sin, because if we would not do that and would just assure the sinner that he's not a sinner, he would go on sinning. Whereas we deal differently with the sick. Here it is different. He says, yes, the sick is not healed just merely by declaring that there is no sickness, but by knowing that there is none. So we never say to a sick person, well, you better first know that you are sick and that you consider yourself to be sick. We right away go a step further and never admit that man is sick, because he naturally wants to get rid of sickness, whereas the sinner, he doesn't like to get rid of sin. So we deal differently with a sick person. There we can assure him right away that he cannot be sick, and in this way lift him out of sickness. So by knowing that there is no disease. Well, this is the tone of mind, and you can see how here the whole proposition of evil is dealt with through the fact of knowing the right method of how to deal with it, and not just by believing in the claim of sin. Yes, that seems to be rather clear. Then we come to spirit as spirit. Here we take a step forward. Here we have, this demands not evading the demonstration of the unreality of evil. So can you see? At the first step in mind, we first have to be clear about the whole situation, so that we are not in an illusion, that we are not mystified by the whole thing, but that we have a clear view and that we know how to deal with the situation. Then the next step is that you actually make that step, and that we do not evade making that step, do not evade the demonstration of the unreality of evil. The marginal heading points to this again. It is wicked evasion. You see, it's wicked, it's evil, and it's evading the issue, not facing the issue. Whereas spirit says, you must make a clear-cut distinction, a clear-cut separation, and not evade it, not mingle it. It's a separating process that has to go on right there. We can ask ourselves, how does Mrs. Eddy now develop that whole issue. And she does it like this. Again, she has that juxtaposition. Always here you have this confrontation and the comparison between the two extremes. So one extreme is that she says, we cannot just say that evil is unreal. Can you see? That would be mind, spirit as mind, in a false sense. Just say, just have the belief that evil is unreal. We must know and demonstrate this statement that evil is unreal. So this is the proposition that she puts right at the beginning and says, look here, make the further step and know know that you have to demonstrate the unreality of the claim. We cannot just assume, can you see? Again, she repeats the whole meaning again. First she said, we cannot just say that evil is unreal. Now she says, we cannot just assume that there are no claims of evil, and yet to indulge in them, see, that would be the mingling of it. This would be a moral offense. On the other side, it says, evil which obtains in the bodily senses, but which the heart condemns. Which the heart condemns. You have the heart of spirit, the affection of spirit, the worship of spirit, the awe we have for the spiritual facts. So that evil which the heart condemns has no foundation. Gives a terrific resolving of the whole situation and says, within that heart there is no evil and therefore has no foundation. Again she compares and says, well, evil which is uncondemned is undenied and nurtured. See, the false sense of spirit and the fruits of spirit and the birth of spirit and the bringing forth of spirit is nurtured. And under such circumstances, to say that there is no evil is an evil in itself. That's the whole paragraph here. So we can see what she wants to say. Go and tackle a situation. Don't evade the situation. Go and evade and tackle it and see that first your heart must condemn it. Not just a moral effort and say, all right, now, from this time on, I don't want to do it again. Then we are in the same position as Paul was, that he wanted to do the good and he couldn't do it. He just didn't have the strength to do it. And nobody has the strength to do that. There is only one thing, that we go right back to the heart of spirit and begin to see the purity and beauty of the spiritual that will always unfold and always bring us the good. And only then the heart goes along with it. And there, in that heart, evil has no foundation. Isn't that nice? So again, it is not the moral ethics of moralists, but the spiritual ethic of spirit that wants a pure heart. At that point, she goes on to the point of soul. Well, it's a natural thing. She has said what the heart condemns, that has no foundation. But what is it, or how can the heart condemn? And so soul answers that. Soul comes in and says, I tell you how. Namely, by forsaking sin by rising above it. So the answer is, don't fight with evil, don't fight with sin. Don't have a terrific moral fight. Try within your heart to rise above it. Try to rise. You see, soul is always that, that resurrects, that is supreme. See, that's the tone of soul, that is supreme, that lifts us above mortal sense, that lifts us higher and higher. And at that point, she says, Christian Science rises above. Above what? She gives a whole list of how to rise above, and to rise above what? Namely, to rise above the evidence of the corporeal senses. Just don't believe anymore what the corporeal senses tell us, because she had said that in spirit, that the evil which obtains in the bodily senses have no foundation if the heart condemns it. So rise above that sense of the corporeal senses, and you have to rise above sin yourself. You have to do it yourself. It's an individual effort not to be blind towards evil, not to shut one's eye to it, to look it straight into the eyes. Do the good you know as far as you can, not to cover your sins, but to confess and to forsake sin. Naturally, when she says confess and forsake sin, it doesn't mean that you go to a priest in the confessional. It's no use to confess sin to people. They only make more out of it. They only aggrandize it. We have to confess it in our own heart, to admit it to ourselves that something has to be done, that something has to be improved, and by the heart that longs for the spiritual, for the pure, we always find the strength of spirit to rise above everything. So therefore, she says to the teacher, leave a strong impress of divine science. It's interesting how she time and time comes in with divine science. You have perhaps noticed that before, as if she would say, you know, you're really your big reservoir from which you take your strength, from which you take your power and everything to handle the situation, go to divine science. There in divine science, into the oneness of being, where you see that there is already that realm of harmony and peace and rest, and everything is solved. Go out from that high plane of divine science. Then you will do it. So, leave a strong impress of divine science, a high sense of the moral and spiritual qualifications requisite for healing. And she ends up and says that the reception or pursuit of instructions opposite to absolute Christian science must always hinder scientific demonstration. As if she would say again, you can't evade it. The moment we go against true identification, against the absolute Christian science, there is no chance whatsoever that with all our tricks we could succeed.